Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the end of January. You need me to tell you that. Senator John Kerry has pulled out of the race for the Democratic presidential nomination in 2008. In an interview with the Boston Globe, he said his wife was supportive of his decision, but she would have stuck by him through another campaign. She wanted me to do whatever I wanted to do. She was unbelievably supportive, Kerry said. He consulted with Senator Edward Kennedy, who was also supportive of his decision either way, as well as top advisors in California, New Jersey. New Jersey? Excuse me. And Washington. New Jersey, where the New York Times reports today that a fund set up to take money from casinos to help, I believe, build affordable housing has instead been ransacked for money to pay for building more casinos. But, you know, New Orleans is corrupt. 9/10 of his advisors, says Kerry, wanted me to run. I had an enormous amount of pressure to run. But I had to go with what was in my gut. My gut told me this was not the right time, period. So that's what John Kerry has in common with George W. Bush. They both decide based on their gut. And, you know, apparently he wanted to run before he wanted to not run. So he goes out, you know, in style, in his style, in his own very special style. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm in receipt of an email from Chris. Dear Mr. Shearer, on the recent list show, you joked about Pepsi Spice. I made a funny suggestion that naming rights to people's actual personal names would be just a few years away. This emailer tells me it's already happened. A few years ago, a minor British TV personality, Julia Carling, did something similar. She gained her name from being married to a sportsman. Mr. Carling, perhaps unknown to you, but here in the UK, there is a lager called Carling. Yeah, we have an ale, babe. We're not that ignorant. As a publicity stunt and presumably sponsored, she was known for a period during 1999 as Julia Heineken. That is so good. So it's been done. And another email. Dear Harry, I ran the Lahore Marathon you mentioned in last Sunday's show. Ended with a 3:30 time, which is not bad. Two items. Pervez Musharraf, you are still mangling his name. Par, as in golf. Vaz is an ace, par vase. Of course, it doesn't lend itself to the abbreviation that I prefer, perv. What you could have not have known, he says, is that the race was started twice because officials lost crowd control when par vase showed up in the stand close to the starting time, the starting line. The elite runners from Africa paid to run, and the white runners ended up about 30 feet from the stand, and him, it was stupid to be anywhere near a perpetual target like Musharraf. His presence creates lethal territory here. Maybe that's why the crowd started the race itself the first time, but then was called back. By the way, for the entire 26 miles, there was an armed guard every 50 meters. 30,000 people participated, but 14,000, so I heard, were needed to put it on. This to prevent the religious conservatives from disrupting the race in the land of softness. On the ground in Pakistan, thanks from blah, 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 blah. So that's the story from behind the scenes in Pakistan. Ladies and gentlemen, from the Look Who's Talking Department, General Michael Hayden, the director of the CIA, told the Senate that the amount of Iranian-supplied material used against U.S. troops in Iraq, quote, has been quite striking. And then he went on to say, Iran seems to be conducting a foreign policy with a sense of dangerous triumphalism, unquote. Thank goodness no other country is doing that, or we'd have a dangerous situation on our hands. And from a New York Times obituary this week on E. Howard Hunt, the Watergate co-conspirator who died. In case you didn't know this, just too much freaking perspective. In 1954, Hunt helped plan the covert operation that overthrew the then-elected president of Guatemala, Jacobo Arbenz. Quote, "What we wanted to do," said Hunt, "was to have a terror campaign to terrify Arbenz, to terrify his troops," unquote. The operation succeeded and ushered in 40 years of military repression in Guatemala. But if you want to conduct a war on terror, President Bush, I'd start right in your own hometown. Hello, welcome to the show.
Move your body, now stop, move your mind, 'cause in this space and time, there are more than jewels out there to shine. I mean, hold it down, stop acting the clown, 'cause the things you do are cause enough to frown. Dance, lady head, it wasn't about what doesn't exist. If I was to believe everything you said, I'd end up believing the grass is red. Get excited, folks are acting criminal. Your action is something that should be indicted.
From the home of the homeless, from the edge of America, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. Ladies and gentlemen, the quote of the week comes from Lieutenant General retired William Odom, former head of the NSA, National Security Agency, from 1985 through 1988, responsible for the nation's signals, intelligence, and communication security. So he's been out of the job for a while. He's on the staff of the Hudson Institute, which I believe is not a liberal think tank. But he says, quote, "The American effort in Iraq has gone badly because the United States did not understand the consequences of deposing Saddam Hussein." He says the principal beneficiary of the war, it's two beneficiaries he actually names, Iran and Al-Qaeda, not the United States. Didn't the host of this broadcast say that Iran won this war a couple years ago? Yes, he did, and he didn't work for the NSA. Quote, Lieutenant General Odom, "There is no way to win a war that is not in your interests. What's your plan for victory?" He gave testimony to the Senate Foreign Relations Committee earlier this month, and some of it's kind of interesting in its declarative clarity. It's not moral clarity, but it's the next best thing. The role that U.S. military forces can play in the conflict is seriously limited by all the political decisions the U.S. government has already taken. The most fundamental decision was setting as its larger strategic purpose the stabilization of the region by building a democracy in Iraq and encouraging its spread. This, of course, was to risk destabilizing the region by starting a war. Four major realities define the war: confusion about the war aims and U.S. interests. The war served primarily the interests of Iran and al-Qaeda, not American interests. We cannot reverse this outcome by more use of military force in Iraq. To try to do so would require siding with the Sunnis and the Ba'athist insurgents against the pro-Iranian Shiites. On the international level, the war has effectively paralyzed the United States militarily and strategically, denying it any prospect of revising its strategy towards an attainable goal. What's your plan, General, for victory? As long as U.S. forces remain engaged in Iraq, not only will the military costs go up, but also the incentives will decline for other states to cooperate with Washington. In their view, we deserve the pain we are suffering for our arrogance and unilateralism. Overthrowing the Iraqi regime ensured the country would fragment into at least three groups, Sunnis, Shiites, and Kurds. The invasion made it inevitable that a civil war would be required to create a new central government. Yet a civil war does not ensure it. No faction may win the struggle, he says. We are already being blamed as a facilitator for the civil war, he says. Let us suppose, he says, we had unlimited numbers of U.S. troops to deploy in Iraq. Would that change my assessment? In principle, if 2 or 3 million troops were deployed there with the latitude to annihilate all resistance, order might well be temporarily reestablished under a reign of U.S. terror. The problem we would then face is we would then be opposed not only by 26 million Iraqis, but also by millions of Arabs and Iranians. It is, this is quoting General Odom, former head of NSA, our super-secret spy agency, it is a strategic error of monumental proportions to view the war as confined to Iraq, yet this is the implicit assumption on which the president's new strategy is based. We have turned it into two wars that vastly exceed the borders of Iraq, the war against the U.S. occupation and the Shiite-Sunni war. Any military proposals today that do not account for both larger wars must be judged wholly inadequate, if not counterproductive. Any new strategy that does realistically promise to achieve regional stability at a cost we can prudently bear and does not regain the confidence and support of our allies is doomed to failure. To date, says General Odom, I have seen no awareness that any political leader in this country has gone beyond tactical proposals to offer a different strategic approach to limiting the damage in a war that is turning out to be the greatest strategic disaster in our history. Lieutenant General William Odom, before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. What's his plan for victory? Hard to tell. Army Lieutenant General David Petraeus, believes the U.S. government has made a host of serious mistakes in Iraq, according to the written testimony he delivered to the Senate Armed Services Committee before being confirmed as our top commander in Iraq. And among the errors he cites are inadequate planning for the occupation, failing to recognize the emergence of the insurgency, not having enough troops to in certain areas, and holding elections in such a way that they deepened Iraq's sectarian divisions. Aside from that, Mrs. Lincoln, wasn't the play great? Petraeus also said he might supplement efforts to secure Baghdad using the Iraqi Facilities Protection Service, a 150,000-man force that guards Iraqi government agencies. But according to the Washington Post, there are bad elements in those units carrying out murders and kidnappings, according to Senator Jack Reed, Democrat of Rhode Island, who visited and quoted Iraqi Premier Maliki. Because of the FPS, Reed quoted Maliki as saying, some governmental ministries' guards are more dangerous than the militias. The Facilities Protection Service was formed by order of L. Paul Bremer. You know, he's going 8 for 8 on his orders. The Iraqi study group described FPS members as being having questionable loyalties and capabilities, quoting a senior unnamed U.S. official as saying that they are incompetent, dysfunctional, and subversive. Aside from that, they're reliable. News from Iraq, ladies and gentlemen, for your entertainment and edification here on the show. And there's more. The desperate plight of children. This is from the British newspaper, The Independent. The desperate plight of children who are dying in Iraqi hospitals for the lack of simple equipment that in some cases can cost as little as $1.50 is revealed in a letter signed by 100 eminent doctors backed by a group of international lawyers who say the conditions in hospitals in Iraq amount to a breach of the Geneva Conventions. How quaint that require Britain and the United States as occupying forces to protect human life. In a direct appeal to Tony Blair, why, you think George Bush doesn't care? The doctors describe desperate shortages causing hundreds of children to die in hospitals. The signatories include Iraqi doctors, British doctors who've worked in Iraqi hospitals, and leading British consultants. Sick or injured children who could otherwise be treated by simple means are left to die by the hundreds because they do not have access to basic medicines or other resources, the doctors say. Children who have lost hands, feet, and limbs are left without prostheses. Children with grave psychological distress are left untreated. Stuff happens. Isn't that what we say? Doctors are calling on Britain and America to restore at least $2 billion of $14 billion that has gone missing since the invasion. Part of the sum lost in corruption or to militias was earmarked for hospitals. And just to keep you on track, up to 260,000 children may have died since the invasion of Iraq. Don't say why they died. You know, Iraqi children die. That's what they do. They die. Two U.S. soldiers have pleaded guilty to murder charges in separate cases involving the deaths of Iraqi civilians that may have tarnished the reputation of U.S. forces in Iraq. According to the Australian newspaper The Age, Sergeant Paul Cortez admitted the rape and murder of a 14-year-old Iraqi girl and the execution of her family on March 12th of last year. His lawyer said he felt it was in his best interest. He wanted to accept responsibility, and he wants to move forward in getting this behind him. You know, ladies and gentlemen, if you can't get a rape and murder behind you to move forward, what can you get behind you? He would not reveal the details of the plea agreement, would his lawyer, but said Cortez had agreed to cooperate in trials of the remaining three accused soldiers. He awaits sentencing in a jail near Fort Campbell, Kentucky, does the man who pleaded guilty. Specialist James Barker, 23, who pleaded guilty in November, was sentenced to life in prison. Prosecutors say the five soldiers spotted the victim on the street and plotted to break into her home to rape her. Once inside the girl's home, they killed her parents and 6-year-old sister. Then they shot the rape victim and set fire to her body. The group's alleged ringleader, former Army Private Stephen Green, pleaded not guilty in a civilian court, and a trial date has not yet been set. And in an unconnected case, because these are just bad apples, 25-year-old Marine admitted charges of unpremeditated murder connected to the death of an Iraqi civilian in April of last year. Corporal Trent Thomas faces a maximum prison term of life without parole, will be sentenced February 6th. He admitted charges including unpremeditated murder, conspiracy, making a false statement, and assault. 5 of the 8 servicemen implicated in that particular killing have now admitted charges connected to that death. The group had planned to go after a known insurgent, according to Thomas, but was compromised and went to a neighboring house instead. The judge asked why the group proceeded with the plan. quote, "We would get someone else to make a statement that we were sick and tired of getting bombed," Thomas said. So he and other squad members seized the victim from the house, walked him to a hole, cuffed his hands, and threw him to the ground. The victim spoke little English, Thomas said, but he pleaded with the four Marines as they led him away. He started asking, "Why, mister, why?" Thomas said. We didn't say anything. The Strong Silent Types, ladies and gentlemen. And now, copyrighted feature of this broadcast. News of the warm, won't you?
Soft, listen to the warm. We can listen to the warm.
Giving the phrase sunblock a whole new meaning. This is from the Guardian newspaper in Britain. The U.S. government wants the world's scientists to develop technology to block sunlight as a last-ditch way to halt global warming. Research into technologies such as giant mirrors in space or reflective dust pumped into the atmosphere would be important insurance against rising emissions. And the United States has lobbied for such a strategy to be recommended by a major UN report on climate change, which will be published this week. The U.S. has also attempted to steer the UN report away from conclusions that could support a new worldwide climate treaty based on binding targets to reduce emissions as sought by Tony Blair. It has demanded a draft of the report be changed to emphasize instead the benefits of voluntary agreements. The final report, written by experts from across the world, will suggest international negotiations to devise a new emissions treaty to succeed Kyoto. The U.S. response, a copy of which has been obtained by the British newspaper, says the idea of interfering with sunlight should be included in the summary for policymakers. It says modifying solar radiance may be an important strategy if mitigation of emissions fails. During the R&D to estimate the consequences of applying such a strategy is important insurance that should be taken out. Scientists have previously estimated that reflecting less than 1% of sunlight back into space could compensate for the warming generated by all greenhouse gases emitted since the Industrial Revolution. Possible techniques include putting a giant screen into orbit, thousands of tiny, shiny balloons, or microscopic sulfate droplets pumped into the high atmosphere to mime the cooling effects of a volcanic eruption. The draft report said such ideas were speculative, untested, uncosted, and with potential unknown side effects, which could include memory loss. The U.S. enthusiasm is based on the views of dozens of government officials and is accompanied by a letter signed by the senior climate negotiator at the State Department, Harlan Watson. It complains that the existing draft is Kyoto-centric and wants to include the work of economists who've reported that the degree to which the Kyoto framework is found wanting. It takes issue, blah, blah. It also includes the wording on the ineffectiveness of voluntary agreements be altered to include a number of them have had significant impacts. Mirrors in space, ladies and gentlemen. So you can always know how you look. Won't that screw up? What if the Chinese shoot those down? Also from The Guardian in London, carbon dioxide is accumulating in the atmosphere much faster than scientists expected, raising fears that humankind may have less time to shoot giant mirrors into space or tackle climate change otherwise. New figures from dozens of measuring stations across the world reveal that concentrations of carbon dioxide rose at record levels last year, the fourth year in the last five, to show a sharp increase. Experts are puzzled because the spike, which follows decades of more modest rises, does not appear to match the pattern of steady increases in human emissions. At its most far-reaching, the finding could indicate that global temperatures are making forests, soils, and oceans less able to absorb carbon dioxide, a shift that would make it harder to tackle global warming. It would mean that we have to launch more giant mirrors into space. We'd always know how we look. And on a related environmental note, but not News of the Warm, which is a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. A veteran member of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission said this week that the Yucca Mountain program for storing nuclear wastes is deeply flawed. No, really? Man, I had my money on that. And that the Nevada nuclear waste site should be scrapped. This according to Ed McGaffigan. It may be time to stop digging, and it may be time to rethink, he said in a critique of the Energy Department program, as he prepares to retire from the five-member Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Speaking to a group of reporters, the official said the Nevada site probably could be licensed if it had been handled properly through the years. You mean it? But he said it has been doomed by failures in Congress to correct flaws in nuclear waste laws and by Energy Department missteps, including appointment of some directors who, quote, really weren't cut out for the job, unquote. I think Yucca Mountain has been beset by bad law, bad regulatory policy, bad science policy, bad personnel policy, bad budget policy throughout its history, says McGaffigan. Every time somebody has done something to try to speed things up, it has backfired. Every year that passes, we are not going to get any closer to Yucca under the current circumstances, he says. The Energy Department now projects a opening date of 2017, but he says 2027 would be more realistic. McGaffigan has been an NRC commissioner for 11 years, the longest-serving member in the agency's 32-year history. So what does he know? Keep that high-level nuclear waste at home, ladies and gentlemen. Don't even bother sending it to Yucca Mountain. They don't need it. They can't do anything with it. They'll just send it back.
Slow down, Krishna, slow down. Your red Trans Am goes way too fast. Slow down, Krishna, slow down. All your current life may be your last. Krishna is a holy man, an example to us all. It's curious the choice he made when he bought the car last fall. We sent him out to buy a bus to carry us around. What a big surprise it was to hear that throaty sound. He drove up in a new Trans Am with windows tinted black. Seats like buckets, leather brassiere, but there is no room in back. No, there is no room in back. Oh, slow down, Krishna, slow down. Your red Trans Am goes way too fast.
Yes, it does.
Slow down, Krishna, slow down. All your current life may be your last. Krishna is a humble man, he's quiet and reserved. But when he gets behind the wheel, we all become unnerved. A ride with Krishna is a test of faith and the hereafter. He squeals his tires and passes right, and then he howls with laughter. Oh, Krishna, stop your laughter. Oh.
Slow down, Krishna, slow down. Your red Trans Am goes way too fast. Slow down, Krishna, slow down. Oh, your current life may be your last. He says he's rolling to Nirvana, leaving behind all earthly desire. Oh, Krishna, Krishna, can't you see? You can't get to heaven on TA tires.
Oh, no, 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 you can't get there. Okay, boys, kick out the jams.
Boom, 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 boom Alarm, it interrupts the teachings. Krishna says we should enjoy our time upon this planet, but as we wear our sandals thin, he's driving round with Janet. Oh, Krishna, who is Janet? Oh, slow down, Krishna, slow down. Your red Trans Am goes way too fast.
Slow down,
Krishna, slow down. All your current life may be your last.
Please sing along now.
Slow down, Krishna, slow down.
Your red Trans Am goes way too fast.
Your red Trans Am goes way too fast.
Slow down, Krishna, slow down.
Slow down, Krishna, slow down.
Or your current life may be your last.
All your current life may be your last.
A cappella!
Red Trans Am goes way too fast.
Everybody,
slow down,
yeah.
All your current life may be
10 more times. Okay, one more.
Your red Trans Am goes way too fast. Slow down, Krishna, slow down. All your current life may be your last. All your current life may be your last. All your current life may be your. All your current life may be your last.
This is Le Show, and now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. Yes, it's a copyrighted feature. Thank you for asking. Deadline London, an Iranian offer to help the United States stabilize Iraq and end Iran's military support for Hezbollah and Hamas was rejected in 2003 by Dick Cheney. That's what a former top U.S. State Department official told the BBC. The U.S. State Department was open to the offer, which came in an unsigned letter sent shortly after the American invasion. According to Lawrence Wilkerson, former chief of staff for Colin Powell, Wilkerson said, Cheney vetoed the deal. Quote, "We thought it was a very propitious moment to strike a deal," Wilkerson said, "but as soon as it got to the White House and as soon as it got to the vice president's office, the old mantra of we don't talk to evil reasserted itself." A spokesman for the State Department says he wasn't aware of any letter from the Iranians to the U.S. government in 2003. That's the sweetest kind of denial. I'm not aware. Tony Blair must work with the United States to find alternatives to Guantanamo Bay so the detention camp can be closed, says a report published by an influential committee of British members of Parliament. The report says the camp, used to house terror suspects, fails to achieve minimum British standards of access to exercise, recreation, legal support, and access to the outside world. British soldiers fighting the Taliban in Afghanistan have had dozens of urgent requests for operational equipment turned down on grounds of cost, according to the conservative British newspaper, The Telegraph. Demands by officers for attack weapons and vital tools, as well as night vision equipment and thermal imaging devices used to distinguish friend from foe, have all been turned down. It's like they're like us. Best kind of allies, ladies and gentlemen. People who make the same mistake we do. Corrupt police and tribal leaders are stealing vast quantities of reconstruction aid intended to improve the lives of ordinary Afghans and turn them away from the Taliban, according to the conservative newspaper The Telegraph in London. In some cases, all the aid earmarked for an area has ended up in the wrong hands. Defense officials in the United States and Britain estimate that up to half of all aid in Afghanistan is failing to reach the right people. A 50% corruption rate. I thought New Orleans was supposed to be. NATO forces in the south of the country say some Afghan police are guilty of corruption and will steal aid if it is handed out. Tribal and mosque elders have also been accused of seizing goods, including building materials and fuel, and selling them in markets. Pentagon officials said thousands of cars and trucks intended for use by the Afghan police have been sold instead. That's the magic of the market. NATO commanders in southern Afghanistan are deeply concerned at the level of corruption. People in the area said tribal and mosque elders are guilty of stealing aid. On a cheerier note, except it's a little disturbing as to the lack of perspective of one of our close allies, Australia has made its share of mistakes, especially in the treatment of Indigenous people. But it is still, according to John Howard, Prime Minister of the Island Nation, Island Continent, it's the greatest nation on earth. What could he be thinking? Has he not heard of us? Striking a conciliatory note, as he welcomed 125 new citizens, the Prime Minister noted the historic delay in granting Aboriginals the vote. He acknowledged triumphs and failures in the country's history. But he was upbeat, saying, "It's a wonderful nation, the greatest on earth. We think we're pretty good, and we are." Greatest on earth? Do some reading up, babe. It's a country that starts with an A and ends with an A, and it ain't you. Dateline Ottawa. More news from outside the bubble. Canada's spymaster is warning that this is the Australia of the North. Canada's spymaster is warning that excessive government secrecy and draconian counterterrorism measures will play into the hands of terrorists. Quote, "The response to the terrorist threat, whether now or in the future, should follow the long-standing principle of, quote, in all things, moderation." That's Jim Judd, director of the Canadian Security Intelligence Service. He talks like a European, doesn't he? Quote, "The response must be calibrated carefully so as to optimally protect Canadians and Canadian interests while containing an often natural disposition of giving in to fear and panic." As if there's something wrong with giving in to fear and panic? What are you supposed to do? It's so Canadian. He says, actually, no, it's not him. It's a study by his agency that found a very rapid process of transforming some youths from angry activists into jihadist terrorists. The study says enraged over what they perceive as a Western war on Islam and coaxed on by extremist preachers, a few have embraced terrorism with frightening speed. Judd says governments and societies must measure their responses to terrorism by keeping in mind that it is driven by the aspirations and actions of a select group of individuals. We should not accommodate their goals by overreacting. That's a fundamental objective of most terrorists in history, possibly with the exception of Howard Hunt. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, no, sorry, one more. Dateline Sulaymaniyya, Iraq. As the Iraqi government attempts to secure Baghdad, its decision to bring a third party into the mix may cause more problems than peace. Kurdish soldiers from northern Iraq are deserting the army to avoid the civil war in Baghdad, a conflict they consider someone else's problem. This is according to the McClatchy newspaper group. Much as Shiite militias have infiltrated the Iraqi security forces across Arab Iraq, the Kurdish Peshmerga fill the ranks of the Iraqi army in the Kurdish region. One thing they didn't bank on, though, was being sent into the fire of Baghdad. The soldiers don't know the Arabic language. That doesn't stop Americans, babe. The Arab tradition, and they don't have any experience fighting terror, says a former Peshmerga commander who's leading a brigade being transferred to Baghdad. He called the desertions a, quote, phenomenon. I can't deny that a number of soldiers have deserted the army, he says, and it might increase due to the ferocious operations in Baghdad. I joined the army to be a soldier in my homeland, not to fight for others whom I have nothing to do with, says one Kurdish soldier. I used to fight in the mountains and the valleys, not in the streets. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen. Any wonder why it's a copyrighted feature of this broadcast? And now, you know that Vice President Cheney was singled out by Senator John McCain, one of the few Republicans willing to speak on the record and continuously in favor of more troops being sent, more American troops being sent to Iraq. Not Kurds, Yanks, in support of the president's surge policy. But even Senator McCain criticized Vice President Cheney this week, saying the president listened to him too much, the vice president. Vice President, of course, also had an interview with Wolf Blitzer this week, made news because he angrily swatted away a question that Blitzer proposed about the vice president's daughter, his lesbian daughter. Remember how much crap John McCain got for saying that in a debate? Now Wolf Blitzer brings it up. And, well, Dick Cheney is still ticked off, says the question is out of line, but doesn't reject the usage of the word. Blitzer was bringing it up in the context of conservative Christian Republicans opposing same-sex partners having children, being the parents of children. Dick Cheney swatted it away. There's a lot on its mind this week. To find out all that's on its mind, we may have to burrow underground.
Next, intimate tales of America's first underground vice president. The action-packed diary of the man who's just a heartbeat away from history.
Dick Cheney,
confidential. Maybe the happiest part of my week was sitting on the dais in the House of Representatives as my constituent in chief delivered his State of the Union address. You know, this speech was not the one my office crafted for the president. For example, it did not invite the Democrat Congress to bite the executive branch's crank. When that draft got to the Oval Office, apparently scareder heads prevailed. But I did have about 55 minutes sitting up there next to Grandma Pelosi, where I could just chew my medicated gum and stare out at the half of the House chamber that wasn't filled with defeatocrats, and almost be able to pretend my entire town wasn't being overrun with the kind of folks who'd rather talk to an Iranian than kill one. The rest of the week, though, wasn't nearly so relaxing. For one thing, Lane had decided that the secure undisclosed heating system needed some repairs. Apparently, somebody had forgotten to tell our walls and floors about so-called global warming. So, while Navy Seabees filled our little subterranean home with more noise than a New York restaurant at dinner time, I was burning some shoe leather, putting out a spate of brush fires that had been kicked up by our otherwise enormously successful Iraq account. First, our friend Senator McCain had decided that the only way to support our little war project was to attack its most unrepentant author, a fellow by the name of yours truly. So, having used my President of the Senate ID card to access his private office, I was deep into a warrantless search of his password-protected computer files when, without so much as a pardon me, Mr. Straight Talk himself walked straight in. Wednesday, 10:17 a.m.
Mr. Vice President, always a pleasure to see you, although it's more of a pleasure when it's less of a surprise.
Well, Senator, I thought it was only fair, since you claim that the President has been badly served by me, that I come over and share some of that bad service with you.
Well,
interesting donor file you've got here. Lots of folks I might not have understood to be fans of, quote, Straight Talk, unquote.
Dick, you know this game as well as I do.
Maybe better.
Maybe better.
Maybe, not even maybe.
Whatever. You know that if I'm going to continue to support this war project and not be roadkill before the first primary, I have to open up some running room between myself and your shop. You're a big boy. You shouldn't take it personally. At least not personally enough to be snooping around my donor file.
John, my friend, listen. Nobody has more admiration for you not having had other priorities during the Vietnam War than I do.
Well,
but let's just take the premise of your statement for a moment. The President listened too much to me, you said.
I did say that, yes.
Well, exactly who should he be listening more to? Our female Secretary of State, who's shuttling around the Middle East desperately trying to find a sympathetic ear among potentates who think she should be home cranking out kids through a hole in her burqa? Our new Secretary of Defense, whose primary virtue was his willingness to protect 43's dad through an artful rearrangement of certain facts? Steve Hadley, who's so green that when he goes on television, he still tries to answer the question he's been asked?
Maybe you should make room in your regimen of medications for a small dose of political realism. You're so radioactive right about now, I wouldn't be surprised if the Iranians were trying to weaponize you.
John, in case you haven't noticed, I'm all the President's got right now. All the rest of the brain power in this operation is out monetizing its expertise. Fife, Wolfowitz, Pearl, even Rumsfeld. Everybody in this shop who knew how to dream big, they're all gone. If the constituent chief isn't listening to me, he's listening to himself. Nobody wants that.
Dick, I know you think I don't talk straight anymore, but my friend, this talk couldn't be straighter if I quit politics. You're not the big man in this town anymore. Ross Perot was right. You can hear a giant sucking sound. It's your power going down the drain of political reality.
Interesting diagnosis. Maybe you'd want to share it with your secret group of high-level donors. Except, too bad the database they live in has just been securely deleted.
You didn't...
Plenty of time to reconstitute it. Unless they've decided to speed up the fundraising calendar this particular cycle. Thanks for the lesson in political realism.
Oh, seriously, Dick, don't fool around with...
Sounds to me like somebody didn't back up his data. Enjoy your running room. Within the half hour, I was on the other side of town, subjecting myself to a television interview. Oh, they're always unpleasant. For one thing, I have to ditch the medicated gum. For another, as part of Operation Restore Credibility, I was well out of my comfort zone. I wasn't doing the interview with my friends at Fox News or Meet the Press. Instead, I was subjecting myself to a grilling by Wolf Blitzer at CNN. Fortunately, he had the grill set to low heat. All the better reason to spatter some grease his way. Wednesday, 12:17 p.m.
Mr. Vice President, thanks for this interview. Seen in this country and around the world. You're in the Situation Room.
And we're clear.
Now, thanks for real, Mr. Vice President.
Wolf, when I told you the question about my daughter was out of line, I hope you didn't think I was being hard on you.
Oh, I'm a big boy,
because, in fact, I was taking it way too easy on your ratings challenged ass. As a matter of provable fact, every single question you asked me was out of line.
Well, sir, it's not out of line to question the Iraq strategy in light of the...
Yes, it is. As a matter of fact, I hope that wasn't one of your very valuable lights I just tripped over.
I think that Time Warner can afford to replace one light, Mr. Vice President. It's not like in the Ted Turner days when...
Yeah, I suppose you're right. Well, Wolf, I'm sure they can afford to replace the camera, too.
Yes, sir. I think the viewers will appreciate the fact that you let me engage you just a little bit on the history of the war, given the polls that show that...
Wolf, the only poll I'm interested in is the one who sent more than 1,000 of his troops to help us in Iraq.
The President...
If he can understand the stakes, I would expect you to if I didn't know better.
Well, and as for your daughter...
Let's put it this way, Wolf. You may know what one of my daughters is, but I know where your kid lives.
Sir, you know that nobody is a bigger...
And one other thing, Wolf. The Situation Room I'm going back to isn't a set. One thing our friend Mr. Blitzer can count on. Next time I have a hunting accident, he's not going to get the exclusive interview on it. End of Partial Diary for the end of January 2007. Sincerely yours, Dick Cheney. Confidential. Confidential.
Rocking in the kitchen till the break of the day. Monkey and a woman in a uniform. Rocking in the kitchen till the break of the dawn. You're my baby girl. You're my baby girl. You're my baby girl. I love the machine. You're my baby girl. You're my baby girl. Rock you, honey, ready and I can steal your money. Gonna rock you, honey, ready and I can steal your money. Monkey and a woman in a negligee. Rocking in the kitchen till the break of the day. Monkey and a woman in a uniform. Rocking in the kitchen till the break of the dawn. You're my baby girl. You're my baby girl. I love the machine. You're my baby girl. You're my baby girl. I love the machine. Can steal your money. First I hit a rock, then I hit a roll. Now I'm hitting on you. First I hit a rock, then I hit a roll. Now I'm hitting on you. Can a man be good to his brother? Oh. Can a woman carry the weight? Can we work to help one another? Thank you.
we're so sorry.
Just a moment for some apologies of the week. Walmart will pay more than $33 million in back wages to thousands of employees after turning itself into the Labor Department for paying too little in overtime over the past 5 years. Walmart said it will not seek to recover any overpayments. It said the settlement includes no fines or penalties and it has adopted measures to prevent the errors from occurring again. We are committed to our associates, says the Walmart spokesperson, and we've apologized to them for this error. Former President Carter, said at an appearance at Brandeis University, a sentence in which he appeared to suggest in his new book that Palestinians would not have to end their suicide bombings and acts of terrorism until Israel withdraws from the territories, quote, was worded in a completely improper and stupid way. He added, I have written my publisher to change that sentence immediately. I apologize to everyone here. An almost apology. In a statement to ABC News, Bill Shine, senior vice president of programming for Fox News, acknowledged that, quote, the hosts of Fox and Friends gave too much credence to the Insight magazine report that Barack Obama, was educated in a madrasa in Indonesia and spent far too long discussing the premise on the air. These remarks, however, were clarified on the next Fox and Friends program. We consider the matter closed and believe the senator feels the same way, end quote, Fox News. And following up on last week, the Prime Minister of Canada has now apologized to Meher Arar and agreed to give $9 million Canadian in compensation to the Canadian Arab who was spirited by U.S. agents to Syria and tortured there after being falsely named as a terrorism suspect. And WHO guitarist Pete Townsend has apologized to Bob Dylan and the Rolling Stones for saying they're too old to tour. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. That's going to conclude this week's edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, around the world via the internet at two different locations, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, whenever you want it, live or archived, right on your computer. Think of that. On the Giant 104 in Berlin, on Channel 133 at XM Satellite Radio, XMPR. Available as a free download at www.audible.com/LeShow and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. When will we charge for this stuff? And it would be just like charging for this stuff if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. Email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego and Pittsburgh desks. The show playlist available at harryshearer.com. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica. Yeah, they're in the middle of their pledge drive right now, but still, they originate in a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. So please give.